course of discussing movies, the host will spoil plots. You've been warned. Listen to their screams.
Greetings, ghouls and creeps, and welcome to Listen to Their Screams, a horror podcast that feels like you're chatting with friends. I am one of your friends, Dave. We're joined, as always, by our other friend, Ike. Ike, how are you?
Hey, I'm not doing too shabby. Question for you, though. Have you ever had wasabi-flavored edamame beans?
I have, yeah. Those are pretty good.
I just found them the other day. I've seen them online before, stuff like that. And I found the other day at Publix, and they're like the dry roasted edamame beans with wasabi on them. Whew, they're good. Polished off that bag real quick.
I think, man, where did I first? I would guess that I probably got those at, here we go. Free plug for Jungle Gems in Ohio. And, I'm guessing that's probably where I got them. But yeah, those are pretty damn good.
Yeah, so first time I ever had them.
Wasabi, some good stuff. On this week's episode, we'll be reviewing Butcher's Bluff, but we get there. Ike, and did you watch anything else this week?
Honestly, not a whole lot. We made it through season one of From, and we started on season two. So we're going to slowly get our way through season two and then watch the third season of From. And then after that, we're going to catch up on Yellow Jackets because that's coming out as we're talking. I haven't watched it yet, but it's on the horizons. There's a documentary on, I think Hulu or Disney Plus, about Ruby Frank. Who was like a mommy vlogger type thing on YouTube, but like she ended up doing like a lot of like really fucked up stuff. So I'll probably check that out because like her kids made the documentary from what I understand. So like the people that she like really messed with, like, they're speaking out, having their story told type deal. So that's real life horror.
Yeah, no shit. Sounds intriguing. All right, let's see. I did watch one movie this week besides Butcher's Bluff. I watched on Peacock from 2021. I watched the movie Easter Bunny Massacre.
Nice.
And I just happened upon it. I was scrolling through horror stuff and I thought, oh, we're close enough to Easter, I guess. And I watched it. It was okay. Not heavy on the Easter stuff. It had Easter stuff. But it's not like a legit, like the Easter Bunny was the villain here. It was an Easter Bunny costume. It was used in it. But it did occur around Easter. But it was an okay movie. So that's out there on Peacock and I don't know, possibly other places, I guess. I don't know. But I did watch that. So, but all right, then let's move on.
Order up.
Here's one house special cheesy slasher. Enjoy.
And it's time for our cheesy slasher of the week. And this week, well, I guess a cheesy slasher is a cheesy or a low budget or whatever slasher movie that Ike and I present to you. And this one's going to be fun. This week, we present to you the movie Teeth. This movie was released on January 18th, 2008, written and directed by Mitchell Lichtenstein, starring Jess Weixler, John Hensley, and others. It is described as still a stranger to her own body. A high school student discovers she has a physical advantage when she becomes the object of male violence. One little tidbit, there was a musical adaptation of the film done in 2024. Now, Ike, I have never seen this movie, but have you ever heard of the movie Teeth?
I definitely have, and I've seen it.
Oh.
It's interesting. I do you know like what the premise is?
I
Like,
do, yes.
okay.
Yes. The physical advantage is quite unique.
Yes. So this movie's on like Tubi, Freevee, and all like those types of sites. I mean, you could pretty easily find this. It's sort of like a satire horror, and it's supposed to be sort of like a what's the trying to think of the word to best describe this movie, but it's supposed to be sort of like a commentary on like
Like a coming of age movie.
Yeah, sort of like a commentary, sort of a satire coming of age type movie, and it's very unique. It's not the worst movie, but it's also a little weird, so you do kind of have to go into it with an open mind. But yes, I have seen this movie, and it's certainly something.
Yeah, we'll just leave it at that, and we'll urge people to go out and watch this movie because, yeah, from what I read, it's something that I think I need to watch just because. I think it's one of those things you just
Just for
gotta
experience.
watch. Yeah, and so there you go. It is Teeth. Like I said, it's available on several of the free platforms out there. So just do a search on your smart device, and I'm sure you'll find it somewhere that you can watch it. So let's move on to our next segment. Talk to us, Internet! It's time for Talk to Us, Internet. This is where Ike and I either respond to some listener feedback or just pick up on a point on social media. As we were doing today, I picked up on a point that said, with the rapid development of AI, will it end up being more of a positive or a negative within the horror genre? Ike, what do you think of that?
So I have very strong feelings about AI. Just as a general rule, I think that AI should not be involved in the making of any art. I think that AI can be used as a tool to potentially help aid people in the development and creation of art, but I think that with film specifically, the area that we have to be very careful with AI is that AI is starting to get to the point where it can be used to mimic people's voices. It can be used to mimic their likeness to do certain things. I mean, free AI is getting pretty advanced. So if free AI is getting advanced, then more professional, more structured AIs are probably even more so. So in my opinion, I think it's a slippery slope because it'll eventually get to the point where actors will sell their likeness to people to make films. There's actually a really interesting episode of Black Mirror about this, where people who signed up for the streaming service actually sold their likeness by signing up for the streaming service, and the AI would generate a TV show about their likeness and. It would make them do like horrendous stuff, like cheat on people, kill people, like the whole nine yards. So obviously that's a little extreme, but that is effectively what will happen is, AI will get to the point where it will begin to replace certain aspects of, cinematography. And, to me, something like AI is a slippery slope. It'll eventually get to the point where it will try to replace all aspects of cinematography in these big, production studios will try and take advantage of that because it will be cheaper. It'll be cheaper to pay a couple, what do they call them? A couple, tech people to throw together some AI prompts to generate a movie than it would be to actually pay people to do the whole production and everything else. So, my opinion, AI should stay the fuck out of it. Like I said, if an actor wants to, there are some people actors who use AI, for instance, to run lines. Stuff like that's fine. You know what I mean? Some
Sure.
people use AI to help develop marketing and advertising and stuff like that's okay too. You know what I mean? But the real big picture is that it starts bleeding in on the peripherals. It's eventually going to reach the center. And if we let it get to the center, that's when we completely destroy the form. So that's my opinion.
Yeah, I don't like AI. I mean, AI has uses, but it as there is anything, it's going to be misused. And I don't know but I'm a very strong believer in the creative arts, whether it be movie, whether it be music, whether it be an actual form of art, painting or whatever it might be, or writing or whatever it is. The primary ingredient in all that is the human, the soul, the human, right? The feelings, and a human knows how to, good or bad, knows how to do that. And no matter if you like it or you don't, there's a piece of that creator in it. and they're putting a piece of themselves in it, and AI cannot replicate that stuff. And it's just going, number one, if it starts in, it's just gonna produce garbage. It's just gonna be just cheap garbage that's out there. It's just not gonna be any good. I'm very fearful that in something like horror, and other filmmaking and things, that you'll see it creep in, being used more and more for, the effects purposes and this and that. And again, it is a dangerous slope, because the more you start to, when you start to use that, the more and more it creeps, the more and more it does, and everything else. And I don't like that. And of course, I'm a big proponent of practical effects anyway. I prefer practical effects even to CGI or anything else. So this, this is not a move that I would want to see. But I think it's going to be something that will come face to face with at some point. And I don't, like I said, I don't think I'm going to like it. And I just, I don't know. I hope that the horror genre does not get caught up in it, because a lot of horror fans tend to be kind of stuck in their ways. They like practical effects. They like some old school stuff. They like, playing with that stuff and doing that stuff. And I don't think any, you see a lot of low budget horror movies, whatever else, that are clearly people not out there just, trying to make a quick buck off of it. So hopefully they'll stay away from any of this kind of stuff. And stick with their passion and their guts and their way. But I guess we'll see. AI is a scary thing for me. It just really is. Because I don't know. There's in so many levels, because there's just, I'm going to be blunt. There's just so many goddamn stupid people. And they are, I mean, there are already people that are confused by fucking social media clickbait headlines that they just take as fact, and literally the stuff that anybody can put out there. And they just take it for fact because they saw it and it looks like it's a something, right? And AI is only going to blur that more, and it's going to give the dumb more ammunition for their stupid arguments. And they're not going to believe or one way or another, right? They're either going to say, this is true because I saw it, and you won't be able to convince them otherwise that it's not true or not real. Or they'll use it to say, oh, what you're saying is not real. It must be this. And it's just, man, I don't know. No offense to anybody, but the ignorant do not need more weapons.
Exactly.
And I see enough of that all the time. And AI doesn't help. So.
No, not at all. But
All
one
right.
other thing, I wanted to add one more thing to you
Yeah.
there,
Yeah. Yeah.
because you kind of even mentioned it, but people already use AI for nefarious means. So it's like, what happens if we let it proliferate and we continue to let it grow and expand and develop, and we start letting it leach into our everyday life by legitimate means? There will come a day where there will be things that we cannot discern are real versus fake. And like you said, there are already people, and I mean this as kindly as possible, but America, I think they've said that only like less than 50% of people in the United States have a functional literacy level. So it's like we have a functionally illiterate society who already is having a hard time with what AI is generating. So it's like, at what point do we have to say, like, look, AI is not a good idea because it's only going to cause issues. And yeah, that's my big thing. And here's the thing about it too, that I'll be 100% honest about. I don't understand how a lot of AI works, but I don't not like AI because I'm scared of it because I don't understand it. I am scared of what AI could do, which is why I don't want it to proliferate. So just wanted to throw that out there.
Well, yeah, and like anything, the fear is not from AI or whatever, anything in general, right? It's nothing in and of itself to me is that it's scary. It's that item or whatever it is in the hands of corrupt people.
Right.
That's where the bad stuff happens. AI in and of itself, I mean, as far as we know right now, is not in and of itself like an evil or bad thing. But there are people that are always trying to use everything, anything, whatever they can, for nefarious means. And I mean, spinning it back to filmmaking, you already see you see people that are putting out fake trailers for stuff and whatever else, and there are people that are believing that these are
Yeah.
real trailers, and I'm like, man, that's we don't need that. That's ridiculous. And it's like, I don't know. It's just a waste of time to me. I don't understand, but whatever. So, oh, we could talk for days probably, but let's move on.
Generation Gap.
And it's time for Generation Gap. This is the segment where we kind of do the generation divide between Ike and I. Ike was born in 1995, so we either I pick a pre-1995 movie or Ike picks a post-1995 movie, and the other has to give kind of a comparable type movie from their side of the fence. So far, it's been all me, and that is no different today. I am picking the pre-1995 movie for Ike to counter with, and in honor of the upcoming quote-unquote holiday in a couple weeks, I am presenting to Ike from 1986 the movie April Fool's Day, which I know it's been remade, but Ike, what is your post-1995 movie that you are countering with?
Yeah, so this one's a little unique because April Fool's Day is described as a sort of dark comedy mystery slasher movie, and I have seen April Fool's Day, and the essential premise is that they go on like a I think it's like a spring break trip or something to like a an island, and they go over there, and there's like this person that's like playing all these practical jokes. Some of them are harmless, some of them are not so harmless, and they kind of escalate. So I don't think that there's any movie that truly follows that same sort of like formula, unless you're looking at remakes, because there's no other movie that kind of generates off of the concept of like practical jokes escalating to murder. But a sort of dark comedy satire type movie that came out, I believe it was 2011. Let me double check my date real quick. Yep, 2011, was a film called You're Next. And You're Next, it is a family who is at sort of a ex non-exclusive, a secluded area. And they all basically go, and there's obviously some family turmoil, and it's sort of a dark comedy satire where also it's sort of a mystery who done it, right? Who's doing this? Why are they doing this? And people are getting killed, so it's a slasher. So it kind of still fits the genre. Maybe not a verbatim, post movie, because obviously it's not the same concept, but I this is one of those the movies that came immediately to my mind when I was thinking about April Fool's Day. Like, what's a movie that's kind of like vaguely in that same kind of category? And boom, Your Next was what came to mind.
I think it's a good call. I think it's well, yeah, why not directly? I mean, it's got the same energy about it and
Right.
the same vibe. I think it's a good call. So and again, I know April Fool's Day has been remade, I think just once, I believe. I'm not 100% sure of that, but I know it's been remade at least once.
Right.
So urge people to go out and give April Fool's Day the original and the remake if you want, and You're Next, give those all a watch. And I think they're all pretty solid movies, fun to watch. And there you go. There's some picks for your movie viewing pleasure, courtesy of a Generation Gap. So, all right. So let's take a break, and when we come back, we will have all our news, birthdays, anniversaries, all of that fun stuff. So stick around. Make sure you subscribe to listen to their screams on your favorite podcast platform. Also, make sure you look us up on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, TikTok, and Slasher. All you have to do is look up Listen to Screams, that is Listen, the number 2 in Screams, and you can find us there.
Also, make sure you go and buy yourself a Listen to Their Screams t-shirt. You can find all of our shirts at tinyurl.com/screamsshirts.
Spread the news. Spread the news. Spread the news.
And welcome back with the news. All right. We have our first little bit of information here, which I'm very excited for. Zach Krieger, known for his role of Barbarian, will direct the next Resident Evil live-action movie. There is now a release date of September 18th, 2026. They knew this was going to be my favorite movie next year, and so it's coming out 2 days after my birthday. That'll be my, what is that, my 31st birthday. So, super excited for this. I've talked about Resident Evil pretty extensively, I would say, on this podcast to some degree. Mm-hmm. And actually, Resident Evil came up not too long ago. I don't remember what it was for, but I love the live-action Resident Evil movies. I really like the Welcome to Raccoon City movie. I was really disappointed to hear that they weren't going to proceed with that. I genuinely think that had that movie been released like today, it probably would have generated a sequel, but it came out in sort of the tail end of the pandemic. You know, a lot of people were, you know, obviously the pandemic's not fully over, which is a whole conversation for another day, but at least in 2021, when the Welcome to Raccoon City movie came out, I felt like it suffered because of its poor performance in theaters, which was partially due to the ongoing and more active pandemic at the time. So I'm very excited that they're going to take another stab at it, that they're not going to just let it die in the water. And I feel confident that Zach Krieger will be able to do this. I've seen a lot of stuff about it, how he wants to make it more, you know, more likening to the source material and also just try and really push that originality. Now, I think every director who's made a Resident Evil movie has said, oh, I want to make it as close to the source material as possible. And they very rarely don't, or very rarely do, I should say. So we'll see what happens, but I'm excited. Sorry for the rambling.
No, that's all right. Primarily put in here for you. You know, I mean, Resident Evil, I like Resident Evil, what I've seen of it, you know, but I'm not, it's not one of my passions or whatever, but it's enjoyable. I do like, I mean, Barbarian, we you know, what was that, two years ago, something like that, 2 or 3 years ago, whatever, we talked about Barbarian. And I'm, you know, from what I remember, I've only seen it the one time, but I think we both enjoyed it. I thought it was a pretty, you know, pretty solid movie, and you know, and he's a very talented dude. So, it's pretty, it's neat when a property like that, you know, which is a big property, and really a property that should, and I'm not saying that the past projects haven't worked, but it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be able to start and stop. Whatever, it should just be this. I don't know. It should be this. Really, to me, this successful property, right? I mean, based on the games and everything else. And I think part of that is finding the right passionate creative person on board. And hopefully he is it. And I think this has got the potential, weird enough to say, for the big breakthrough on this side of the media for Resident Evil. Again, not saying some of the past stuff has not been successful and whatnot, but I think this has got the potential to be kind of next level for them, you know, kind of I almost want to dare to even say almost, you know, Five Nights at Freddy's kind of level as far as movie goes. I think the property is strong enough that it could really be a breakthrough movie, a top level movie, right hands. I really do. I don't see any reason for it to not be. So
no, you're 100% right. I think that with the success of Five Nights at Freddy's, I think that I honestly think that Resident Evil will have a better shaking chance because of Five Nights at Freddy's and because of some of the success, like, of Sonic. You know what I mean? They've made three of those bitches. Like, yeah. Like, I think that there have been some stepping stones to sort of prepare the spotlight for movies like the Silent Hill movie that we're hopefully going to get this year, and then the Resident Evil movie that we'll hopefully get next year. So I think you're 100% right. And like you said, I'm not saying that the previous properties aren't good, but the Paul W.S. Anderson movies are okay. it was very clear that he was just making a movie for Mila Jovovich because she was in every single fucking one of them. And you know, the Johannes Roberts project, the Welcome to Raccoon City, it suffered a lot because of some of the restrictions of when the movie was being made. So I think that Zach Krieger is probably one of the better options because he had to get creative with Barbarian. He did fantastic, you know, work with, you know, the SFX and the practical effects. So I feel pretty confident that we will get a strong, I'll be honest with you, the creature out of Barbarian kind of looks like a Resident Evil monster. I mean, that thing is creepy as hell. That thing looks grotesque. Like, I think that he's got a running start with the creature design. I just think he needs to land at home with the movie overall. So, but you know, you brought up a very good point. Five Nights at Freddy's, seeing how successful that was, should give people the idea that, hey, it is possible for them to make a good movie and it not be like absolute dog shit.
Yeah, and I think, again, I'm not like, you know, an avid, whatever you want to call it, but I do think some of the Resident Evil projects in the movies, I think were a victim to timing. I just think some of them were probably just too early for the big boom of stuff for this. And I don't know, you know, I just, it just put you, you know, you put the same things in a different time and it might be, you know, it might do a little better, but you know, in either way, I think we're gonna get a fun movie, no matter what. And I look forward, you know, I'm like I said, I'm not what you would call a huge fan, never really been where I've counted down for anything, but this is probably more than any other related media in this franchise, you know, in the Resident Evil franchise has got my interest and got, you know, had me looking forward to it. And again, it's just having that right guy on board. Like, okay, yeah, you know, I want to see what this guy can do with this. And so hopefully, you know, hopefully it translates.
Yeah, absolutely. But all right. Well, we better move on because, like I said, I could talk for hours about Resident Evil and where I think it should go. And
We always get sidetracked on something in the news. Typically it's Scream, but
no Scream news today. There's a relevant birthday
there's
coming
a
up,
birthday, but yeah.
but we'll see how that goes. We'll see where that train
We'll
takes us.
keep it brief.
Oh man. But all right. Moving on, Jaws. We're going to need a bigger boat. It is returning to limited theaters in August for the 50th anniversary. Yeah, you know, it's Jaws is obviously an iconic film. So many great movies that spawned from Jaws and were inspired by Jaws. And we're going to get a 50th anniversary limited run, which, you know, Caitlin, my wife, has never seen Jaws, so I might try and convince her
What?
to go and see it in theaters. I feel like that's the real way to see it.
Yeah. I mean, I've never seen it in theaters, obviously, because it's
It came out before you were born, I
well,
think.
pretty sure it came out the year I was born. But
Dang.
and well, yeah, it would be, right? If it's in August, man, wonder when Jaws is released, because me and Jaws share a birthday. Because I turned 50 in August as well. But you know. So I've never seen it in a theater. So I you know, I hope I get a chance to see it because I love Jaws. I think Jaws is, man, Jaws is a great movie. And so this is cool. And it's pretty exciting and not surprising, right? They do a lot of this, these events for big anniversaries, and you know, the 50th anniversary of a movie is, especially like Jaws, is pretty damn big.
Yeah, no, I was gonna say that's a big anniversary. 50 is a hell of an anniversary. So, but
At 50 years old, I think the movie holds up.
I think so. I think as far as creature flicks goes, you know, I know that's a very, you know, specific genre for some people, but as far as like creature feature animal features go, Jaws is sort of like the grandfather of those features, and it still holds up, I think, like you said.
Not to mention, even outside of horror, Jaws pretty much spawned the summer blockbuster. This was the first summer huge movie. Where it got studios to think, okay, we can release that, you know, a quote unquote, a summer blockbuster, a summer, you know, and you get those all the time now. This was the first movie that kind of broke through with that.
Yeah, absolutely. But all right, again, we get talking on that too, and you're talking Jaws, man. But yeah, check out your local theater listings, see if there's anything popping up for you guys, and let us know if you enjoy Jaws and the big screen.
I want to see it in fucking IMAX.
Right. That would be pretty cool. Oh man. But all right. We're gonna get on to Gremlins: The Wild Batch returns with five new episodes on Max on April 10th. There was a Gremlins show, The Secret of the Mogwai, and
Yeah, this is just
I'm
a
not
continuation of that.
gotcha.
Yeah.
I've not I don't think I've watched any of the what's out currently for this one. I've seen The Secrets of the Mogwai, but I haven't watched this Wild Batch part yet.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the wild yeah, maybe not. I don't know if the Wild Batch. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if this is I put returns in this, but I don't know if this is the first five of this. I don't know. Or if this is whatever. But it's the same, it's just a continuation of that old. Or that, not the old, but the other one that we did the review of, remember? But yeah, so I don't know. The other was pretty fun. So if I got, get time, I'd probably give this a watch too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think I would too.
Do love
It's
some
a little,
Gremlins.
all right, a lot of some Gremlins. But all right, very cool. Very fun little news segment there. But we're going to move on to some upcoming birthdays. March 14th, 1965, Kevin Williamson, writer and director of Scream, Scream 2, Scream 4, Know What You Did Last Summer, The Faculty. As well as a bunch of other stuff, I'm sure. Kevin Williamson is an iconic, I would say, writer, director, and within the horror genre. But Scream, obviously, is like, I would venture to guess Scream is probably his most successful
I think
product that
so.
he's made. I mean, that movie is so crazy.
Yeah.
But
Oh, wait. I'm kind of scrolling social media though. We actually have some Scream news here. It just broke. There's
really.
something else returning. Apparently for this one, the Jiffy Pop popcorn from the first film is also returning.
Oh
I joke. No. Whatever.
that's
Sorry.
funny. I thought something was really happening. I was
No, you're like, really? Who else?
like, who else are they bringing back for a flashback? This fucking movie is gonna be 99% flashbacks. Holy shit!
This movie's
Oh
gonna
man,
it's gonna be like 6 hours long just to
just
try to get people their
the
screen time.
flashbacks. Oh my. Yeah, they gotta contract these people out, and they're like, okay, we promise you at least this many minutes of screen time. This movie is 4 hours and 45 minutes long, folks. Oh man, bring me the Williamson cut. I kid, but happy birthday, Kevin. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you for screaming. What else will we talk about all the time?
If we didn't have Scream, what else would we have to talk about?
But in all seriousness,
Oh man.
I love the franchise. It's a great horror franchise. So.
No, absolutely. It is fantastic. But all right, we have one other birthday who is equally as legendary. We have March 18th, 1950, Brad Dourif, the voice of Chucky, as well as many other things, of course. He's done other things than being Chucky, but obviously Chucky is his most iconic role. Brad Dourif is a good sport. He's been doing this for a good many years, so thanks to him for continuing that legacy and still doing the voice of Chucky.
And I mean, obviously, it has, numerous times in the first film and then in the Chucky series actually, played, whatever Charles or Chucky, the actual man, was actually in it. But, and yeah, good guy. I mean, would Chucky be the same without that voice? I doubt it.
Right, I was gonna
It's a
say.
per he's I don't know, just perfect. In retrospect, it's like you can't imagine Chucky sounding like anything else.
That's what I was gonna say. You have that voice and you have that iconic sound, and it's like how could you have somebody other than Brad do the voice of Chucky? So it's like if you were to try and remake Chucky, you would have to continue to use Brad Dourif's voice. Unless he passes away, and in which case you'll just use Fiona Dourif, who does
That's right. Yeah, she
pretty good
does a pretty
impersonation.
good impersonation of her dad, man, I'll tell you.
So yeah, so get her on that role. I'm sure she'll do it until she's in her 90s too. I mean, why not?
Yeah, why not?
Oh man, I kid. But anywho, happy birthday, Brad. And we're gonna move on to some upcoming movie anniversaries. March 13th, 1981, The Howling. We've talked a lot about The Howling too, as well, I should say. And not specifically The Howling 2, The Howling as well. And yeah, The Howling is a great little movie, and the sequels are not.
Yeah, that's very true. Absolutely. I do love The Howling, but yeah, it should have probably stopped there, but that's okay.
Probably, but I mean, hey, if they didn't stop there, we would have never got The Howling 2. My sister's a werewolf.
I'm sure somebody loves them.
I'm sure. Listen, I appreciate The Howling 2 for how absolutely fucking ridiculous that movie is, and for the fact that they somehow got Christopher Lee to appear in that movie. Like, I just want to know, like, who pulled, like, how many favors to get that actor in that fucking movie. I mean, Christopher Lee is a classically trained actor. He is a very famous actor. And The Howling came out in the 80s, the second one too. So how did they get him in that movie? I genuinely want to know, like, what magic, what ass pull do they have to do to get that guy in that movie?
They must have paid heartily.
They must have, but I don't imagine they had a large budget unless every single dollar
Well,
from their
I
budget
would
was
say
in their
perhaps
pocket.
they blew the budget on him, and then it's like, oh shit, what are we gonna do now?
I mean, I won't lie to you, the effects are pretty neat in the second one. The rest of the actors are not good whatsoever. I'll say that first and foremost. Like, none of the other actors are even remotely, even in the same realm as Christopher Lee, obviously. But we'll have to do a whole episode on The Howling one day so we can talk about how ridiculous these fucking movies are. But
Yes,
that's for another day.
we need to do a franchise review of that one.
God, have you seen all The Howling movies?
Yeah, one time or another, but it's been a while, and I don't remember about a lot about many of them. And that's probably just a that's probably a safety reaction by my brain.
I was gonna say that's like a fight or flight reflex.
Yeah,
Your
my
brain's
brain saw it
blocking
and was like,
out.
no, we're filing that away with the fucking algebra from high school. You don't need that shit.
Oh man, that's funny. But anywho, The Howling has a birthday on the 13th, so check it out if you haven't already. It's free all over the place, guys. You could watch this on YouTube, I'm pretty sure, for free.
We joke. The first one's a good movie, though.
Yes, the first one's good. And then it just goes downhill. But
That's right.
anywho, on the same day, a mere 6 years later, we have March 13, 1987, The Evil Dead 2. Oh man, Evil
Probably
Dead 2, Electric Boogaloo.
the best of the franchise in my mind.
I would say it is definitely up there. I think the first one is great, but I think the second one basically goes back and it fixes all the shit that the first one did wrong.
I think this, yes, I very much the second one very much feels like them, if they had the budget, what they would have done to begin with. And obviously expanding a little. I mean, they added to it. I'm not saying that, but I'm just, if they'd had more money, the first one would have been more like two, I think. I think two is the one that it's like the movie they truly wanted to make when they could make it. But that's just my gut instinct.
I think that I'm sure if we actually went out there and found it, I'm sure that they've probably talked about this before, Bruce Campbell and Sam Raimi. I'm sure they've talked about, like, why the two movies are so similar, and I'm sure that's probably the answer. But
But I love the second one, probably
yeah.
my favorite. If somebody want to say, what's the Evil Dead all about? I'm just like, just go watch Evil Dead 2.
Right, exactly. Just skip the first one, watch the second one, and then you can go back and watch the first one later.
Yeah, come back. You got to come back and watch it later. Or once you're hooked enough that it's interesting to you. But
Right.
I mean, I enjoy the first one. I just don't think it's the movie that if you watched it would necessarily get you hooked on the Evil Dead. If you were, I don't know. I think people would watch it and be like, oh, that's okay, but I don't think I want to watch more of those. But you watch the second one and then you're like, okay, I can get on board with this. And then you throw at them like, whatever that the fucking what's that fuck, what's the Army of Darkness? You throw like
Oh
fucking
yeah.
Army of Darkness and just fucking blow their mind then. They're like, what the fuck is this?
Was gonna say you're gonna watch those movies and it just cascades into madness. It really
It
does.
does. I hope to God nobody tries to introduce this franchise to anybody with Army of Darkness. Because if you watch that first, people are going to be like, what in the fucking blue blazes is this movie franchise about?
No, that would be the equivalent of like having somebody start like the Marvel movies like on Infinity War.
Yeah.
Like they're throwing you just neck deep. Like they're just like, fuck it, just watch this one, just go from there. But honestly, I was thinking about it, I was mulling this over, and I just kind of had this weird epiphany. The movie The Evil Dead, it is sort of like All Hallows Eve to like
Yeah.
Evil Dead is to Evil Dead 2 what All Hallows Eve is the Terrifier, like, or even better yet, how Terrifier is to Terrifier 2. Because I'm pretty sure Damien Leone's even said that, like, Terrifier was sort of like a working concept. Like, he was able to sort of expand upon, like, what happened in All Hallows Eve to kind of make the Arthicon character a little more, relevant. But Terrifier 2 is what he would have done if he had the budget. So, it's kind of an interesting comparison now that I'm just mulling it over.
Yeah, no.
Which, weirdly enough, guys, leads me into our next movie anniversary, March 15, 2018. Terrifier graced our world. Terrifier. We talk about it, I think, just as much as we talk about Scream. Dave and I have a deep, deep love for Terrifier, a deep appreciation.
That's by choice, though, not by.
Yes, that's my choice. The Scream talk is more out of obligation in some way.
Trying to keep up on the news is.
I feel like that meme of Charlie Day from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, where he's got like the pictures behind him and the red yarn like
Yeah.
sprawled, and he's like looking at, fucking crazy, dude. I'm just trying to keep things straight. It's like the Scream connections here are almost as convoluted as like the Texas Chainsaw movies are, which is a whole other topic of discussion. But back to Terrifier. We by choice talk about Terrifier a lot, just simply because we have a very deep appreciation for the movie. It is simply speaking just a fun slasher. The original Terrifier from 2018, so good. Is not super deep in story. I'm not going to lie to you and tell you that this is like an Oscar-winning movie. It's not, but it is such a fun movie that in of itself, the slasher genre, it feels revitalized by this movie.
Yep, and I will tell you, oddly enough, I think I love the first Terrifier more after having seen all the sequels that have come out, because, two and three are just like right next level films, but it's like then when I go back and watch the first one, it's like I have this whole new appreciation for it. I don't know, it just seems, I don't know, there's like this simple innocence of it that mimics like my falling in love with the franchise and the character art, right? Because it's like it just gives you this foundation of who he is and what's happening, right? And then it's like once the it hooks you and you have that, then it's like, okay, now we're gonna lay it on you. And
Right.
I just think, don't get me wrong, I love two and three, but I just feel like, and when people talk, I feel like the first one's just a little underappreciated. And don't, I love Lauren Lavera, and her character and whatever else, but the girl in the first one, to me, is still, it, I think she's underappreciated too. And
Yeah.
if you haven't seen the movie, whatever, it's like we said, it's been a while, so no spoiler of it. And the fact that she didn't survive the movie, just it's like, and it just blows my mind. Because it's like when you watched it like for the first time or whatever, you're fully expecting her to be like the final girl that comes out of it in the end, and it's like, I don't know, man, it was kind of a brilliant little swerve where it's like, nope, not her, not the girl you've been watching the entire movie, but the girl's sister.
Yeah, I was gonna say, and honestly, I thought about kind of what you said too, is that once you watch like Terrifier, like once you watch all the Terrifier movies, like if somebody were to watch it, I feel like through the lens of like seeing some of the later movies, you develop this very deep appreciation for the progenitor, the sort of the first one, right?
Yeah.
I don't really count All Hallows Eve as his origin. I think Terrifier is more akin to that. I truthfully think that All Hallows Eve was just, Damon Lillian trying to make his character, do something, right? Because all Hallows Eve was the two shorts that he shot before compiled into a movie with another random short and, you know, and all that. But Terrifier is just such an underrated movie. And I hate when people like, oh, it's pointless. It's just people dying and it's just people getting killed and it's just gruesome, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, that's a fucking point, man. It's a fucking point. You missed it right over your head.
Yeah. And, but again, but I even in retrospect now, it's like I also have a little more appreciation for All Hallows Eve, even.
Yeah.
Not that I think there it's, I don't think it's nearly on the level of the other three movies, but it's like watching it now. I don't know. Maybe it's just because I love the franchise so much and I love the character so much. It's like it's a whole new vision when you watch it now of seeing where it came from. And then there's also, no offense to the guy that played him in all, I can't remember his name, but that played him in All Hallows Eve, right? He did a good job. Yeah. But then it also gives you this whole new level of appreciation for David Howard Thornton and how he took what was laid down in All Hallows Eve and just like perfected it. And I don't know. I mean, it's like, I don't know. It's like the whole, each movie in the franchise just gives you, to me, gives you more appreciation for the other movies, even of how it is, how it builds, how everything's, it's like, I don't know. It's so wild to me because it just, it feels so organic with the growth and the success and how everything's building. And it's just, it's wild, right? I mean, again, here we are, you know, we went down the Terrifier rabbit hole. We, you know,
but I don't know, like I said, but
back to Terrifier itself. Good movie. Love it.
Yeah, I was gonna say we'll drive it home there. Terrifier, yeah. You know, we have a lot of appreciation for it. We'll have to do I feel like another episode sometime where we talk about the whole series, and you know, we'll have to find some time to fill some gaps and talk about these, you know, the Howling and
well, there is together. There is very soon a I haven't really looked into it closely, but apparently on Screambox there is some form of a, I believe it's a documentary type thingy on Art the Clown and his impact related. It's more tied to Terrifier 3. So gotcha. It might be an interesting thing to do a little pseudo review of that and maybe explore the whole franchise.
Interesting. I'll have to keep an eye out for that. I will definitely watch that.
I think it comes out this month.
Even better. It would make sense. It's the anniversary of Terrifier.
That's right.
All right, moving on. March 17th, 2000, we have Final Destination, which is also timely because here in a little bit, we're going to be getting another Final Destination movie, Final Destination Bloodlines, which, again, the use of bloodlines is incredible.
Yeah. I mean, and it's funny because it's weird now because there's been so many Final Destinations and stuff, right? And it's, and you know, and all this, the trope, you know, there got to be a point where it's like, oh, the trope, you know, it's just the same. But man, I remember, you know, the first one being out and watching it, you know, on DVD, obviously, was when I first saw it. But and thinking, dude, this is different. This is unique. Right. And it was, I mean, it was really, and I think people, I don't know, I think people forget that sometimes that, man, at least in my eyes, Final Destination was kind of groundbreaking. It was very unique. In my eyes, you know, we're it's like death was a character, you know, in it, and it was just so cool. It, much like Saul, right, with the games and the puzzles, Final Destination was very cool to see almost the mousetrap sequence of how the characters would die. It was it's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and like you said, it was a revolutionary movie for the time, and I think that, you know, despite some of the lackluster, you know, visions that we got from the other movies, it's still a very solid, solid franchise and a solid movie. So,
yeah. And you just have to take into account, I mean, right. You get so many sequels. Yes. After doing some of this so many times, it's like you get, I don't know, whatever. It gets a little dull, right. And almost it loses that luster, but hey, you got to think about it. And what the first, you know, that the first one's like when it first came out, and you didn't have all that. And there was, I mean, there was nothing like it.
No, not at all. But, all right. we're going to go ahead and move on to our last anniversary, which is March 18th, 2022. We have X. Of course, X was, it was again a very unique film. Speaking of unique films, and how it basically, how it came about, what happened, why did this happen, who are these people? Very unique film, unique concept, spawned a trilogy. We talk a lot about, at least last year, we talked a lot about, Pearl X and Maxine, since Maxine was supposed to be sort of the cap to the trilogy. And, I still say that I love X, but I love Pearl just a little bit more. And I think Maxine's my least favorite of the three. No offense, Maxine. But X was a good movie, and it's very unique that it came out 3 years ago.
Yeah, it is wild. It feels like it's been a lot longer than that, but yeah, it's like I like all the movies of it, but I mean, I still think X is my favorite of it. I don't know. There's just something about it. I don't know. Just I really, I don't know. When I first watched it, I guess I don't know that I expected a whole lot. I thought, oh, this will probably be okay, and then I watched it. I was like, dude, that was a really freaking good movie. And yeah, so it's God, it does feel like it's been a lot longer than 3 years, though, doesn't it?
I was gonna say, it feels like
How
it's
the
been
hell have we
longer
get?
than
How
three
the hell have we
years.
got so many movies in that franchise? That's weird.
Yeah, well,
Not
if I
well.
remember correctly, Pearl came out like right after X did. I think it came out the same year, and it was
They must have been
straight to
filming.
streaming.
They must have been filming some shit back to back, and or something. I don't know. But
I think so.
that's wild to think. It just kind of feels like so much longer. But thus is life.
Right, that's his life, but very good. So we're going to move on now to some upcoming releases. We have two here. We have Bloody Axe Wound comes to Shudder on March 21st. Then it is described as Abbey Blade Cuts. Love that name. Family business, a video store, has thrived by disposing of teenagers to mimic horror movies. As the first female slasher, she battles gender bias while realizing the harsh realities behind the mass murders. And we will be reviewing this movie next episode. Now, this is a unique little description here. First of all, Abbey Blade Cut. That's like calling Michael, instead of Michael Myers, Michael Hackenslash or something like that.
Abby Blade Cut totally sounds like an indie wrestler.
It really does. Oh, man. But,
Yeah, it sounds interesting. So
It
I'm looking
does.
forward to it. But I will say, I don't know. This is one of those movies that it's one of those that you read it, you hear about it. And it's either going to work or it's not going to work. I don't think there's going to be a lot of middle ground with this one. To me,
No.
that's the way it, a horror. That's the way sometimes a horror comedy is. But I mean, we've watched, like the, oh, what was the one? The Rad Chad's Revenge or whatever they were called, and some of those that we really liked that were fun and things like that worked. And it's like this could be one of those. But we'll see, and we'll know. We will
We'll
know
know next week.
next week.
Very good. All right. Now we're going to move on to Popeye the Slayer Man comes to limited theaters and video on demand on March 21st. It is described as a curious group of friends sneak into an abandoned spinach canning factory, love that, to investigate the legend of the Sailor Man, who is said to haunt the factory and local docks. Already 10/10 in my books. It's a spinach factory, so absolutely love that.
So here we go. So here's some expanding upon some of our talk, I think, from last episode about this. Popeye the Slayer Man is not in related to the Pooniverse movies.
Okay.
This is there was a Popeye movie by the same creators of the Pooniverse movies, though, called Popeye's Revenge. So that's where we got confused. There was a there apparently I haven't watched it, but there's already been a Popeye horror movie called Popeye's
Gotcha.
Revenge that was made by the Pooniverse people. I don't know whether it's they're considering it part of that, but it was made by the same creators. So that one kind of slipped in under the radar. This is the one that I've heard the most about. I don't know. I just thought this was the first one, but very. But this one sounds really good. I saw the trailer. or the teaser or whatever it was. I don't know if it was a full trailer. It does look creepy. And I will just say, now, I'm not 100% sure on the video on demand options for this, just to be completely clear for everybody. It
Okay.
was not, it was a little ambiguous, or however you say it, on that. So I don't know if this is going to be a broad video on demand release. I don't know. Again, I don't know. Or I don't know 100% for sure, I guess, if video on demand is the same day as the limited theatrical release. I'm not 100% clear on that, because I really tried to dig into this and get a clearer picture. Some things read like it's the same day. Some things read like it. I don't know. So I don't know. Now, with that being said, I will say that if this does come out video on demand on March 21st, there is a good chance that we may have to do a second review next week too.
Fair enough.
Or by chance, I don't know. There is, I guess, the off chance that Bloody Axe Wound might get booted, because I am dying to watch this Popeye the Slayer, man. So if it does get a decent video on demand release on March 21st, where I can get this and we can watch this, we may switch it up. So we'll see. When is March 21st?
March 21st is, because today, as a recording, is
So
the
that is
11th,
next
so.
Friday. Oh, wait a minute. That's after. I'm
Yeah,
confused.
that'd be after recording. So next Friday, we could review it for the following week.
This. But I'm also very confused. Okay. We may need. Okay. This may be a little peek behind the curtain. We may need to workshop this here right on the air, because it also says Bloody Axe Wound comes to Shudder on March 21st, which is after next episode. But how did we do that?
So again, a little peek behind the curtain, looking at the script here. Well, no, it's not
Did I
script.
get the date wrong?
Well, on the next episode, it says that we're going to review Uncontained, which is available now on Screenbox.
Oh, okay. Okay, so what I did was, my bad. Gotcha. Bloody Axe Wound was supposed to be the week after. You're right. Uncontained is next week. Next
Gotcha.
episode is Uncontained. I don't know why. I think I meant to put in the notes, we'll be reviewing this in a future episode. And for some reason, I put the next just out of habit, I guess. So, okay. No Bloody Axe Wound next week, because it won't be out yet. Which then next week is Uncontained, which we were going to talk about a little bit. But that does then clarify and gives us the gives us the freedom to see what happens. So next week is Uncontained. We don't know what's going to be the week after just yet. It's to be determined. You'll hear about that next week.
That's right. We'll hear about that next week. We'll see what happens, but
That was
good
very
stuff.
confusing, and wow, I apologize that everybody had to hear us workshop that right here on the air, or whatever you'll call it.
Hey, it happens. Oh man. But good stuff. A little peek behind the curtain for you folks.
We tell you it's like chatting with friends, and that's kind of the bullshit sometimes you get when you just sit around and chat with friends.
That's right. That's right. Sometimes you got to figure out what's going on and what
Sometimes those friends are just dumb fucking idiots.
exactly.
Not you
That's
guys,
100% fair.
us.
It happens. We're not always the brightest bulb in the bunch. So, all right.
But damn, we're a lot of fun.
True. That's true. We have that going for us.
I guess.
But all right. Well, that pretty much does it for our upcoming releases. Bloody
We
Axe Wound,
think.
and we think
We
Popeye the
don't
Slayer
know.
Wound.
Whatever.
We'll see what happens. But what we'll do now is we'll go ahead and pause. Go ahead and give you guys a moment to go subscribe to us on all social medias, because if you will, you'll see all this stuff before we talk about it on the news and whatnot when we come on. But also, if anything crazy happens, like the inevitable announcement that the side character from Scream 4, who had 2 seconds of screen time, is coming back for the new Scream movie, that'll be fantastic news for you to see as of when it comes out. So, anywho, when we come
They
back,
did sign on two other actors for the next Scream movie, but they weren't returning.
okay,
Oh,
that's
so I was
good.
like, psh, we don't need to worry about
That's all right. We'll see him when we
that.
see him.
You haven't already been in a Scream movie, you don't count.
Good Lord. But all right, we're gonna go ahead and pause, and when we come back, we'll have our official review of Butcher's Bluff. stick around.
Hey, Bruiser buddies, I want you to listen to Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty. Every week, he has the roughest and toughest interviews in the podcast world today, with the best guests you could ask for. There's no bums on this show. Let Dave Dynasty be your podcasting tag team partner and listen to Wrestling Nostalgia while drinking beer, smoking cigars, and busting heads. Just look it up on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe today, because the Bruiser said so.
Hey ho, everybody. Subscribe to the Pinhead Pod, the Ramones fan podcast, bringing you interviews, news, deep dives, and much more. Look it up on your favorite podcast platform. That is Pinhead Pod. All right, and we're back here on Listen to the Screams, we think. We're pretty sure. We're not exactly sure what's happening right now. We've talked ourselves into a state of confusion. But it is all clearing up. The haze is clearing because it is time to review the movie Butcher's Bluff, which was written by William Enstone and Renfield Rasputin. Now, let me pause here for a minute, because when I typed this and it saw this, Renfield Rasputin, that's got to be a pen name. Come on. I cannot imagine that's not a pen name. So that's that. If not, that is... Those parents are just wild. The movie was directed by William Enstone and Matt Riffley, starring Michael Fisher, Dakota Millett, Johnny Huang, William Enstone, who played Hogman, and also wrote and directed, and others. The movie is now available on certain video on demand platforms. This movie was sent to us by Breaking Glass Pictures, and in their description and their hype and all their, you know, their press and everything for it. It is very much hyped as a throwback, you know, that 80s type slasher feel and everything else. And you know what? That's spot on to me. This movie does feel like an old school slasher. And the movie's not deep. It's not convoluted. It's not hard to follow, but I'm telling you what, this movie was a lot of fun to watch. The characters were quirky and wacky. Clearly, there was several characters only in this movie to be victims, but that is true in any slasher like this, right? You got to have. I mean, there was even characters that were introduced into the movie that had nothing to do with the plotline, just to be victims. But that's what happens. That's how a slasher works. There's got to be victims. Again, it's spoiler free. I will say, there's kind of a, I don't want to say a twist, but there's a little bit of a reveal towards the end that to me wasn't that surprising. I will say there was one thing that I thought they were going to reveal that didn't happen. I will confer with Ike off air about that. There was something that I thought watching through the movie that I thought was going to be a little twist to the movie, and they didn't do it, which might have worked that out because I was trying to figure out how they were going to make it happen. But anyway, it didn't happen. But you know, again, this is one of those movies that we talk about, movies that aren't trying to break any molds, aren't trying to necessarily do anything super spectacular, that movies that have just a definite goal on what they want to achieve and what they want to put out there. And they kind of know what they're doing to stay in their lane. And I feel like that was this movie. This movie knew, and these creators knew, they wanted to just make kind of an old school slasher type movie. They weren't trying to overcomplicate the plot. They weren't trying to break any kind of new ground. They just wanted to make a fun little slasher movie. And in my book, they did it. I like the Hogman character. I like the looks of Hogman. I like the story, the background they gave for it, and all. It was really fun. The kills were good. I just, you know what? I enjoyed it. I thought it was a fun movie. And I'd urge people to go out there and give it a buy or a rent and give it a watch if you enjoy slashers, because it's to me slashers. It's hard to find just a kind of a retro feeling slasher nowadays, right? Because it's like slashers are different now, and I'm not saying that in a bad way, but I'm just saying one of those slashers that you can just turn on and watch, and you don't have to really think. You're just looking for the blood and the guts, and a good time, and and a good character. A good killer. And this movie provides that for me. So, Ike, what'd you think of Butcher's Bluff?
I enjoyed it for what it was. Like you said, it's not at all a deep movie. And it was very clear that there were, like you said, there were definitely people who were brought into the movie to just be killed. Which is not at all unheard of as far as slasher movies go. They're the proverbial red shirts from Star Trek. So, and while the movie was fun and entertaining, it was a little derivative. And I don't say that lightly because like I get that like they're to me at this juncture in terms of like media, there's hardly ever a true original like content process. It's just how you present that content, which is what's considered original. And this movie did not have a lot of originality, which I do discredit it a little bit. Very specifically, the whole backstory of Hogman being like this bullied kid who, like, I'm not going to go through all of it, but there's specifically a scene where he's sitting outside of his house in a mask and the police unmask him, very identical to the beginning of Halloween, where Michael is unmasked after his small killing there. I was gonna say killing spree, but I don't think you can count one person a spree. I think it has to be at least two or three people. But I don't know. It's just I appreciate the idea of Hogman and sort of like the whole concept of Butcher's Bluff and sort of the if you will, sort of like news-esque reporting that they did for Hogman and everything else. I did like that. I thought that that was really cool and original. But I definitely could have done without that very blatant, like poking and prodding at what I assume was their attempt at an homage. It just felt forced, in my opinion. Like you could have made that without those snippets. But outside of that, it was an entertaining movie. It wasn't not entertaining. Let me say that. Like you said, it was very fun. Had a lot of cool kills. You could tell that they were not working with a huge SFX budget and effects budget, so a lot of the kills were either implied or perhaps not directly shown. There were a few kills specifically where it was like slice and then blood splatter off to the side, you know what I mean? So stuff like that, and I can appreciate that, working with what you got. So it wasn't a horrible movie. I give them credit for making the movie and providing entertainment value, but I do take some credit away for, while it is almost impossible to be 100% original, it just felt like it was a little too derivative in a way, which is my only complaint about this movie.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that a little bit. To me, I don't know, it just all felt comfortable, and I think they worked very well within their realms. Again, like I'm saying, this is not a groundbreaking movie. I think there are some overt homages to pre-existing slashers and everything else, but I just don't I don't think they care. I think they're fine with that, and I think maybe that's why it's okay to be. They don't try to pretend to be anything they're not. Clearly the movie is set up for a potential sequel, which I don't, given everything, I don't know why they couldn't make another if they want to, in the same vein. But I don't know. I enjoyed it. I gotta say, even coming up though, I like the design of Hogman. I totally would dig on a Hogman action figure of some sort.
I would too.
I think it would be, he's very toyetic and it could work. But yeah, and like I said, I'm a big fan of slashers, so this worked for me.
Again, not anything groundbreaking, not anything that I'm gonna throw up there as one of the greatest of all time or genre changing. But just as a just a nice little, fun slasher movie. I think general horror fans might not like, but if you're particularly drawn to slashers, I think it is definitely you'll at least get some enjoyment out of it. And this is one of those movies that, I think at some point in time I could see myself rewatching. It's not one that I don't think I'll run to rewatch all the time, but I could see myself down the road scrolling through something and be like, oh yeah, I haven't watched that in a while. I'll give it another watch. And there was definitely a couple of characters that were in there just for the kills that I was ready for them to die. There was some obnoxious characters by design. They were designed to be obnoxious characters that I was like, yeah, can we just get to your kill scene already? Because I want you to die graphically. And there was a couple bad people in this movie.
Yeah,
And
there was.
they were, but they were designed to be that way. I'm not saying that bad any other way. That was the way it was done. So let's rate this thing out of five. I thought it was a fun movie. Nothing groundbreaking. So for me, this was a kind of almost a definitive 3 out of 5 type movie for me. Fun enough that it's there, but there's nothing there to me that would even for a moment make me think to give it anything higher. There's just, there's not that much substance to it, but fun enough to me that it's a middle of the road 3 out of 5. So, Mike, what are you thinking?
I think I'm gonna probably just go 3 out of 5 because here's the thing. When you look at these movies, you have to look at it from all perspectives. And while I didn't necessarily appreciate the kind of homages or sort of the derivative nature of some of the things that they did, I still appreciate that they made the movie. You know what I mean? They didn't just say, okay, fuck it. They went out there, they made the movie, and that's what matters. And so I gotta say 3 out of 5. 3 out of 5, will I go back and rewatch it? Maybe. But I can appreciate what they did, and I think they deserve a 3 out of 5.
Yeah, and we do talk about movies staying in their lane, not over exceeding their boundaries, and I think this movie did a good job of not trying to overreach with some of their stuff,
Yeah.
knowing what their limitations were, and I don't and again, I don't think they exposed any kind of huge glaring weaknesses or anything by their filmmaking, right? They're like the fake baby in whatever movie that was. I can't remember what the movie is now we watched.
Cannibal Cabin.
There you go. You're never gonna forget that one, are you?
Nope.
And so I don't think there was anything like that where they just overtly glaringly drew attention to a big, huge filmmaking weakness of theirs with this. So
Right.
there is that. Now, despite all of the confusion you heard earlier, next episode, we are indeed reviewing the movie Uncontained, which is already out. It's available now on Screenbox. So go give that a watch prior to the episode. And if you want to know a little more about it, I think we had that last episode in our news and our upcoming releases. So it's a zombie-esque type movie, we believe.
Yes.
Check that out on Screenbox and then come back here next episode for our thoughts and opinions on the movie. Now, we would like to say thank you to our wives and then all the listeners and followers for all of your support and everything that you do for the show. Like Ike said earlier, be sure to subscribe to us on all social media. We're on pretty much all of the platforms. Just search for Listen to Their Screams or just listen the number 2 in Screams, all one word, and you will find us. You can see our nice cheesy mugs out there all over the social media. That's how you find us. So before we close and get out of here, Ike, anything else you want to add?
Oh man, well, I'm trying to think of anything crazy here to throw out there to people because it's always a good time. Weirdly enough, I started the episode we were talking about the wasabi edamame beans. So another food related question: have you tried the new Pepsi cherry vanilla that they have, or like the cherry cream or something like that?
I have not. I'm not a huge Pepsi person, so I don't try a lot of Pepsi stuff.
Oh man. So I love Pepsi. I think Coke Zero was my number one. But I the other day we went to Publix and they had like a buy two get two for 12 packs, but specifically Pepsi. So I got some like Pepsi products and they're pretty good. But the specifically the cherry cream or whatever the hell it's called is really good. It honestly it tastes like the original formula for Vanilla Coke from like way back in the day. I don't know
Do they
how,
have
but
that in a whatever the Max version or whatever Pepsi?
yeah,
What do they
it's
call
the
their?
Pepsi Zero.
Do they call it Pepsi Zero too? I don't know what it is now.
It used to be called, so again, I for people out there who don't know, I'm like a soda historian, because it used to be called Pepsi One back in the
Yes,
day,
yes, yes.
and then they changed it to Pepsi Max,
Yeah.
and then they changed it to Pepsi Zero. All three were different formulas. So Pepsi Zero is better than Pepsi Max, but Pepsi One was like the OG. It was the best.
Yeah, I did enjoy Pepsi more, but yeah, I'm not a big Pepsi person, but yeah, if I try something, I get a special flavor. I try to get a 20 ounce so that I don't
Yeah.
commit to a 12 pack. But I am, well, I don't know if you want to say addicted, but borderline addicted just Coke Zero. I love Coke Zero, and I mean, we will literally choose restaurants based on whether they serve sometimes whether they serve Coke or Pepsi products. And I mean, we have we know what Mexican place in town serves Coke products, and they always, the good thing is more and more restaurants are starting to have Coke Zero on fountain, and that makes me happy. But I'm not a huge Pepsi person, which is very ironic because I'm down in the in North Carolina where Pepsi was founded, and it's like Pepsi everywhere. There's just
Yeah.
it's I don't know. I'm just I but being a diet drinker, I'm just I don't like diet. Dad, I don't like Diet Pepsi.
Yeah.
It's I don't know. It tastes weird to me.
See, Diet Pepsi is not, in my opinion, Diet Pepsi is not as bad as like Diet Coke. Like, I prefer the taste of Diet
Oh,
Pepsi over
see,
Diet Coke.
not me.
But I prefer Coke Zero to Pepsi Zero, in my opinion.
Yeah, no. I like Coke products. I'm a Coke Zero guy. If I can't get Coke Zero, I'll take a Diet Coke. I do like Diet Coke. I don't know. I mean, I do like, like Mountain Dew Zero and stuff like that. So, but just as far as straight Pepsi, I don't know. Just not. Don't know what it is. Never, I never was a big Pepsi or Diet Pepsi person. I always preferred, when I used to drink just regular soda as a kid and everything else, I always liked, if it was just a straight up soda, I always liked Coke. It was always Coke that I
Yep.
wanted, or Pepsi. But I could talk for a while on sodas because I go through phases with things though. Like,
Same. I'm the same way with soda. Like I go through, well, so when I moved into my new house, I specifically wanted to get like an old fridge for the garage because I love soda. I love to have soda on hand. And so we have it filled with soda right now because I keep buying soda. My wife says I'm not allowed to buy it for like 6 months now. But yeah, no, I love soda. Coke, Pepsi, Mountain Dew, all that stuff. Weird sodas, birch beer, root beer. Love it. Love it. Love it.
yeah, I'll go through phases where, it's like I want to, for a while, where I want to drink like, root beer, or I want to drink like an orange soda, or I want to drink a, Dr. Pepper, or I don't know, even weird things. Every once in a while, it's like, you know what I haven't had in a long time? Like a good grape soda or something. You know, it's
Right.
like, and it's like, you can't, but some of that, like grapes, you can't find that shit in like a zero. I mean, it's such a, so
Not
weird.
unless you go to like a Coke Freestyle, which generally Coke Freestyles are really cool, and you can get like the Fanta Zero. But I'm the same way. Like I love orange soda, so like they make Fanta Orange, but I like Sunkissed Orange a little bit more.
Yes, Sunkissed is the one.
It really is.
I love Sunkissed. I mean, I want to go to this. I had a summer as a kid that I drank all Sunkissed. I was hooked on it. And yeah, the Sunkissed, what is it? Zero? Is it zero now? I can't even remember. Do they have a diet Sunkissed or zero? Whatever. It's the best. But
Yeah.
just weird stuff. Like I remember when, like when LiveWire first Mountain Dew LiveWire first came
Oh
out.
yeah.
Oh, free. And then what was? Oh shit! What was the orange? Is LiveWire was the orange, right? Mountain Dew?
Yeah, I think you're talking about Pitch Black, the grape one.
No, I'm thinking about LiveWire, the orange one.
Yeah,
That's what I'm talking about.
okay.
Oh, when that first came out, oh, I drank the hell out of that too.
You know, they do make a LiveWire Zero. They also make a Code Red Zero, which I can get down here at Publix, which is the only place I've ever seen it. The Code Red Zero, it's super good if you like cherry Mountain Dew.
All right. Well, this is not a soda podcast. We may
It's
have
not. We
lost some
can make one.
people. That's right.
Hey, if they've gotten this far in the episode, they've listened to the whole thing by this point. So,
That's right. They've listened through everything. And here at the end, we just tacked on like 10 minutes about sodas. There. Anybody that listens to us regularly, they're like, yep, that sounds about right. So,
it's pretty on brand.
especially considering they know when we record, it is right prior to dinner time. So we
Yep.
typically talk about some food or drink or both. So, and I'm getting ready to go eat. I think it's a ramen night here, which I'm pretty excited about. So, but okay. So, there we go. Hopefully we made everybody thirsty or drink or hungry or both. So
Right.
we're gonna get out of here because I'm both. I'm thirsty and hungry. So I'm gonna go eat. And guys, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and have many pleasant nightmares.